Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your co-host from the city of Los Angeles, which is in panic mode. The Dodgers are down 3-2, but fear not, they're coming back to Chavez Ravine. I am Steve Kim, joined by my partner in crime up north, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. Gabe, welcome aboard.
Just to show you how much I keep up on baseball, a friend of mine texted me, "Hey man, how about your Dodgers? You know, how they doing in the World Series? What do you think?" I was like, "I think Kirk Gibson is the clear MVP at this point." That's you. Is
Man.
Fernando pitching tonight? Or,
yeah. Does Eckersley, is he going to throw that backdoor slider at 3-2? Boy, I was on pins and needles. But anyway, we have a lot of boxing to get to. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. And, of course, if you want to jump on Twitter, throw us a question, comment, or critique. The president is already lined up. Join him at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. We're here for at least 90 minutes, and this week we do have extra bonus championship rounds available to 9 p.m. Eastern time. So once again, that number, 347-215-7598. But let's get started with round number one. Saturday afternoon in America, it was showtime from Cardiff, Wales, over 70,000 strong from Principality Stadium. The IBF heavyweight title was on the line, and it's retained by Anthony Joshua, who goes to 20 up, 20 down, stopping Carlos Takam in 10 rounds. Somewhat controversial stoppage from referee Phil Edwards, but let's be honest, the fight was never in doubt. Gabe, I would describe this effort from Joshua coming off that life-and-death struggle, which will be talked about a long time, against Vladimir Klitschko. This time around, I thought it was very, very workmanlike. What were your thoughts?
I think, you know, the title reign begins, right? It was workmanlike. I mean, you know, looking at Takam, though, it was like he fought like Bald Bull's cagier brother. You know, it was like, where was the offense? He'd little bits of activity here and there to kind of stay in the game, to seem like maybe he was going to try to take Joshua deep, but he didn't do enough to the body. He didn't risk enough. Didn't put you know all of his weight onto Joshua, trying to tire him out. There wasn't really any veteran tricks besides being a little smaller, a little shiftier, and a lot cagier. I thought Joshua did what he had to do, and I saw the fight, you know, after the fact, unfortunately, because it's always a little bit of a letdown when you know the outcome. But you know, looking at the UK fans and the way they kind of shit on the guy, or just boxing fans, you know, they throwing out that, oh, you know, somebody was asking me, do you suspect him of using drugs? I'm like, why? Because he's gigantic, or because he's been doing VADA for the last two fights? And actually, like, not just in the 365 program, because he's not in that. I think they, you know, Eddie Hearn alluded to the fact that they will sign up now that it's mandated by the WBA. You know, they have their own clean boxing program, but that, you know, he actually had, like, you know, stringent testing for the Vlad fight and for this fight, dating back to when they announced it for Pulev, like several weeks back. So, you know, I just don't understand the shade. Here's a guy that does 70,000 people. Every time out, he's trying to get the knockout. They're not unexciting fights. He's not a jab-and-grab guy. This isn't Lennox Lewis. This isn't Vladimir Klitschko. I think Anthony Joshua is an exciting heavyweight. He didn't get the knockout this time, but this is one of those fights that he got valuable rounds. He got to go deep a little bit. He's only got 20 fights. He needs rounds like this, and he needs fights like this. They don't have to always light the world on fire.
I believe that the anti-Joshua faction, they are really projecting their animosity and sometimes hatred of Eddie Hearn onto his number one client, and a figure that brings Matchroom Sports a lot of leverage and power. That's what I believe it is. I don't even think they dislike Anthony Joshua. I think he's a very likable guy.
Yeah.
He has a very interesting story. Cleaned up his life. Reclamation project with the sport of boxing. Represented the country well, winning a gold medal. And unlike the beloved Henry Cooper and Frank Bruno of the past, this guy's actually a winner. So I do find it bizarre that there is this anti-Joshua brigade, but I, once again, believe that it is about the man who promotes him, and that has clouded the picture. Going to Anthony Joshua as a fighter, Gabe, I don't know if he's as rhythmic or as fluid as a prime Riddick Bowe, but Anthony Joshua is impressive. I've always said the bigger you are, the more difficult it is to have body control and dexterity and actually have good fundamental technique in the sport of boxing. I have to tell you, for a guy that started off relatively late, even as an amateur, and has not spent his whole life in the gym, I think the way he holds himself together technically and the way he continues to improve, I think is very impressive for a man of his stature.
Yeah, and I don't think, you know, he's not going to be a volume puncher, but he definitely throws enough to assert himself. Throws with bad intentions. I like the way he mixes up his punches. He's got a nice uppercut, solid jab. You know, he does seem to tire a bit, but in this fight, wasn't he at his highest weight? And, you know, it's his first defense, a little bit of time off, a little bit of up and down. He was going to have a rematch, then he wasn't going to have a rematch. And then, you know, we got to this opponent the way we did. I think, you know, the fight reflected that. The performance reflected that. He got a little tired. Things got a little ahead of him in that department. I think by round five or six, his mouth was open. But the fact remains that you know, he gets the W. It was a quick stoppage, but it was kind of one of those ones where you're like, where's this fight going? He's taken about five or six flush shots in a few different combinations. He's not really throwing back anymore. You know, you just end it. And I think they move
yeah.
on.
Yeah, Gabe, you know what you call this type of fight? New York City Street. In other words, it's one-way traffic. We all knew the ending.
Yeah.
It was all headed in one direction.
Yeah.
There was going to be no other ending. And, you know, do I think it was corruption? Do I believe that the judge had 10.5 under? That I don't know. I've seen worse stoppages. I didn't agree with it. But, again, we knew from the beginning what the result of this fight is going to be. And, Gabe, going back to the 70,000, I think that's even more impressive than the 90,000 he did a few months ago, because against Klitschko, I could see the 90,000, but when you're facing a late replacement, and Kuprat Pulev, to begin with, didn't sell more than a few tickets, I would imagine. Carlos Takam probably sold even less than that. Now, I believe there was an issue where Eddie Hearn did not issue refunds, but I have to be honest with you. Let's be honest. I think people came to see the A side and the A side only in Anthony Joshua, and all this talk of, well, he has to go to America. No, let me just give you folks a dose of reality as you take off your demographic goggles and your Eddie Hearn hatred. I'm going to school you here. I believe that one day they will go to America, and I think it might be sooner rather than later. I think they will fight Deontay Wilder, but they will do so on their terms because they are the A side. This is not Lennox Lewis, who needed a Mike Tyson or a Vander Holyfield, who was not all that big of a draw in England. And he's even bigger than Ricky Hatton. And this isn't a guy like James DeGale, Amir Khan, or Carl Frampton, who went to America to be B-sides and fought in half-filled arenas. This is a guy that literally sells out football stadiums on his own merit. America, for him and Eddie Hearn, is not a necessity. It's an option. And as I said yesterday on Twitter, boxing is economically based. There is no affirmative action. There's no makeup calls. Deontay Wilder, the sooner he realizes that he is the B side and stops acting like he's a 50-50 proposition here, he'll get that fight. And I think he has a good chance of winning it because he's fast enough and he's tall enough and he's athletic enough to give Anthony Joshua fits. But I think both sides are really posturing here, but I go back to my original point. Anthony Joshua is Mr. Big Stuff. He is literally and figuratively the most business-wise, business-savvy, business-powerful fighter in the sport today. cut and dried. It's that simple.
Yeah, the future's theirs, and I don't really understand the ire for Eddie, but I think that's kind of part of just the relationship that when I grew up in the era of people didn't like Don King, then they didn't like, you know, Bob Arum. Now it's Eddie Hearn's turn, and he was a pretty brash guy, as you pointed out in your column today. He's pretty quick with a trigger and pretty accurate with it on Twitter. Not afraid to fire back at people or just take a shot if he feels a little bit slighted. I like that engagement with the fans. It seems pretty, you know, he's not really petty about it. He picks his spots and makes them count, particularly the one you were pointing out today. I just think, you know, when they come over, like you said, it's going to be on their terms. Deontay Wilder has had his shot to, and granted, it's pretty bad luck with guys testing positive for drugs. That's in some weird way, that's how we ended up with this Stavern fight. That's how Stavern ended up with his title shot, in fact, the PEDs killing fights or reversing decisions. But still, they've had a long time to build this guy into something bigger than what he is. I don't understand how you screw up having an American heavyweight who's a good interview. He's very quotable, not afraid to speak his mind, and he knocks people out. How do they not turn Deontay Wilder into something more than what he is? That's what I don't
Yeah, know. And by the way, hasn't Deontay Wilder been on free TV? At the end of the day, the failures of whoever says that they represent Deontay Wilder, whoever claims to be their promoters, should not be on the head of Eddie Hearn and Anthony Joshua. Listen, the sooner they realize, like Tom Loeffler and Gennady Golovkin did, that, hey, we are the B-side, and we should get what we deserve, not what we want, because those are two different things. I think this fight could be made eventually. But when it's all said and done, no matter how many fans on the UK side are going to bitch and moan that it's all about the casuals, let me give those folks a little bit of a dose of reality here. Get off your high horse. Your money is no different than the casual fans. And if the casual fans want to see Anthony Joshua against a heavy bag, that's their right to pay for it. And the business model is working. But Anthony Joshua, in my view, is the biggest piece of boxing right now. I think he is the most robust star and maybe its most important figure from an international standpoint, even more than Canelo Alvarez, given the fact that he's a heavyweight. And I think Eddie Hearn understands the responsibility in terms of representing something like this, and it will be interesting to see where they go, but there are too many fans, I think, want to see Anthony Joshua get beat for, again, the reason that they want to see Eddie Hearn knocked off his high horse. That is certainly their prerogative. I'm not telling anyone how to feel. However, they're going to run their business the way they want, because when it's all said and done, Gabe, they just did $70,000 for Carlos to come, yet people still think that they need to come to the U.S. Are these people stupid? No, I'm serious. I know that they don't. I don't expect them to know the business all that well, but they can't possibly believe their own bullshit they're spewing. I refuse to believe that.
Well, and it's like they're not looking at the rest of the sport. I mean, look at the guys that have come over that haven't done all that great. I mean, how did Amir Khan really do ultimately coming over here? I wonder what he'd have been like. I mean, granted, he got knocked out and had a bad chin, and there was nothing he was ever going to be able to do about that. And maybe not, he wouldn't have been able to fix it in England. I don't know, but he certainly was ready to sign up with Golden Boy before that and was signed up with them, and heading over here before he'd built himself into a Hatton-like attraction. Carl Frampton came over here. Now look at him. He's fired his whole team. There's a whole new team around him, and that seems like a bad bump in the road, the whole Leo Santa Cruz thing. He seems pretty angry about it, you know, the way it went down, the fact that it was, you know, somehow considered the first fight was somehow considered a home game for him. Because Leo had to fight away from home. It's clear who Al was favoring in that relationship. So, you know, the proof is in the pudding. You don't come over here until you have a reason to. Joe Calzaghe is a great example. He didn't come over here until the very end when he had fights that he could cash in, and he's out. So, yeah, Joshua will come here when the fight matters. And I think, you know, we'll see what happens with Wilder. He's got to get past Javern. We'll break that down a little bit later. Anything could happen with him. I don't trust his
And
chin.
Here's another reality. Do I think the Wilder fight against Louis Ortiz would have sold better than Stavern? Yeah, but not by that much. You know, it would have made a difference, but I don't think it's the difference between 20,000 tickets and, let's say, the 5 or 6,000 that they probably really sold, and they'll paper it up to 7 or 8. But even on the high side of whatever number you want to believe, that is a fraction of a fraction of what Deontay Wilder draws. Anthony Joshua draws. And then people make it – then there's another argument. Well, America's the biggest market in the world. You're right, but that doesn't have nothing to do with the price of tea in China. Boxing in America is a niche sport, much more so than in the U.K. Let's just be very honest about it. For these jingoistic people out here in this country, shame on you, first of all. But I ask a very, very honest, blunt question. If the roles were reversed and Deontay Wilder was the big draw – and let's say Anthony Joshua was in the position of Deontay Wilder, would any American fans, would they be saying, you know what, Deontay Wilder needs to expand his worldwide brand internationally. He should go fight in London. Let's be honest. Would anyone be saying that, Gabe?
Yeah, no, not at all. I think, like you said it right. It's jingoistic. And I think it's Americans remembering when we really were, you know, on top, and we haven't had the title, a star hasn't had the title in a very long time. Deontay Wilder's had that belt, but I don't think of him as a star. He hasn't grabbed the attention, and maybe he just didn't have the machine around him that, say, you know, a Mike Tyson did, or an Evander Holyfield did, but he just hasn't done it. And we keep trying to act like, or at least these fans, try to act like we're calling the shots, and, you know, the fact is, we aren't. Anthony Joshua was calling the shots. He's the man.
I want to make this very clear. We're an American-based show. We are two American citizens. But once again, we take pride in the fact we do not lower ourselves. We do not attract or market or target our show to the lowest common denominator of society. This is why we say this stuff. It's the truth. It needs to be said. We strive for honesty. And this is why you listen to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network. And moving on, it is showtime from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York. Your main event for the WBC heavyweight title, Deontay Wilder takes on Bermain Stavern. And I got to say this. I always say belts matter. I don't think the sanctioning bodies are all the time the worst cancer in the sport. But the fact that Bermain Stavern's had one fight where he struggled against Derek Rossi, remained the number one contender, I think that is shameful. Now, getting that out of the way, is this fight any more competitive the second time around, Gabe?
It shouldn't be if Deontay Wilder is who he says he is. You know, I mean, because it was his best performance to date, right, the first time around. We talked about what he needed to do, really control space, use the jab, box great, mix in the punches, and just take away the smaller man's ability to be aggressive and land at the mid-range. He did all that and looked great. I was like, oh, I guess he grew up. And since then, it hasn't been all that, but at least in terms of technique. So this time around, when you're getting a guy that hasn't fought in like 2 years, you should be able to take him out. If you dominated him before, I mean, at the very least, the rust factor, you should be able to stop him late, tire him out.
Yeah, I think athletically, Wilder is just superior to Stavern. He's a better athlete, better one-punch puncher, longer, leaner, quicker. And Stavern, people say, well, you know, I talked to Don House, his trainer, one of my favorite people in the sport, very bright guy, man I certainly respect. And he's saying, hey, we're more motivated. We couldn't be any worse than we were the last time, and we were dehydrated. But you know what? Gabe, if you had the WBC title back then and you're Bermain Stavern, if you could not understand or comprehend how important that title was to you in your career, I don't know if you get any more motivated this time around. Certain guys, you are what you are. And let's be realistic. He won this title by basically beating Chris Arreola twice, who's never been exactly the most Spartan lifestyle in the sport of boxing.
Yeah.
And Deontay Wilder, to me, I've said this, he's vulnerable, but he's still dangerous. He has a lot of holes in his swing, as they say in baseball. But Gabe, you can't teach power. He might hit 220, but you know what? He's probably the guy that hits 45 home runs. Those guys are kind of dangerous and tough and vulnerable all at the same time.
I mean, you know, if I want to write a better storyline, yeah, then Stavern's in shape. You know, he really, like, all this time, he's like, God, I had it for a second, and I want it back. He finally values it and goes in there and tries to put it on Deontay Wilder. I hope that, you know, Don House is telling you the truth and that you know, this is what they're going to do. Because, I mean, the alternative is, you know, not much glory for Wilder, who's been trying to have, like, a graduation fight for a while, and it hasn't happened because of positive drug tests. So he needs that kind of fight. And I thought we were going to get a better fight than we did the first time around. So I'm hoping for a better fight here and with some explosion. And, you know, we've said it over and over again, those whiskers of Deontay Wilder's, I'm not sure I trust him. So
no,
we'll see.
You know what, though? But you have to get to him. And the last fight, Stavern
yeah.
was so lethargic, so methodical, looked like he was stuck in mud, that for that particular fight, Deontay Wilder did his version of Larry Holmes. He just stuck out that left hand, and he kept him at a distance. If Stavern cannot or will not close the distance and get inside the chest and put that fight into a bit of a phone booth, he has absolutely no chance. Now, if he could control the geography, the distance and the spacing of that fight, he does have sharp, quick, short punches. That's where he can find some success. But again, I just question Bermain Stavern. He had one fight in about 2 years, and you could train all the time, you could be in the gym, but you know, and I know this, there's nothing quite like live competition in the sport of boxing. Gabe, the other two fights on this Showtime triple header, welterweight battle, Sean Porter takes on Adrian Granados, and for the vacant IBF 140-pound title, Sergey Lipinets takes on Akihiro Kondo. But, Gabe, you want to make one more comment about Wilder Stavern?
Yeah. Where's the Transnational Ratings Board in all this time with Bermain Stavern? What did they actually do, those guys? There's a whole bunch of boxing writers that belong to that, and they come up with their own rankings and all that, but, like, how does he keep that ranking if he's not active? Like, you know, he got that ranking in a kind of a weird way. He's supposed to fight Povetkin for the interim heavyweight title in December, and then Povetkin tests positive, so he backs out of the fight. But I guess he keeps the ranking, and it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Why? How you can stay inactive? I can see fighting, like, soft touches to not lose it, while you wait for the title, you know, shot, but not fight at all? Why are those guys, you know, I don't know. If you're going to be like a ratings board police or whatever, maybe we should, you know, be able to explain that. That's all.
I'll be honest. I had completely forgotten about those guys. Anyway, no, I'm being dead serious. Sean Porter, Adrian Granados, I think it's going to be a good action fight between two hard-nosed guys.
Yes.
But, Gabe, as much as I like Granados and I really admire his grit and the fact that he's a guy that's never gotten a single break, isn't he really a 140-pounder and there's a chance he just might get muscled around the ring by Porter?
A chance. That's probably what's going to happen. I mean,
okay.
This guy, what did he do to piss his team off? Because all they do is match the guy hard. And, you know, I mean, like, when's there going to be a fight for Adrian? Not just, kid, we got a great, you know, shot for you here. If you can, you know, beat all the odds and pull it out. I just don't, yeah, he's going to be too small for Sean, who's a physical guy, likes that kind of fight. He's going to be all over him, and he's going to wear out Granados in the back end of the fight. I still see a decision win for Porter, but it's not going to be Granados' night again.
Yeah, Porter has great physical strength. He's like the bull in the china shop. The one thing he doesn't have, and this is going to work in the favor of Granados, doesn't have a lot of precision. Throws wide looping punches. He's not the most accurate guy inside that ring. And Granados is going to have to find a way to pick his spots and really have dead spots. But same time, Granados is not a stick-and-move boxer. He likes to mix it up on the mid-range. And, again, the hope is, can Granados survive the onslaught? And also, can he hit something with Porter that's going to make him think twice. That was the key in the Kell Brook fight. And even with Keith Thurman, they hit him enough and just hard enough where Porter decided, you know what? I'm not going to just get the red carpet right down the driveway. And, Gabe, listen, I think Lipinets is going to beat this Japanese guy for the vacant title. That being said, I think Lipinets is a really good, solid young fighter. I think he's going to be involved in a lot of good fights at 140. I think he's going to win his share of them.
Oh, yeah. He had a mini camp up here in San Carlos, Victor Conte's gym. I didn't catch the mini camp. I caught some of the video talking to Victor. Apparently Remy and him felt he was like one of the most impressive athletes they've ever had come through there. And they've had a lot of fighters come through there the last few years. This guy's, they just talked about how explosive he is, how fast he is, and just the relentless work ethic of the guy. I really like the way he fights. So yeah, I expect him to be the explosion on the guaranteed knockout on this card.
And this card is on Saturday night on Showtime. The afternoon this weekend on HBO for Monte Carlo. The WBA light heavyweight title is on the line with Badu Jack vacating the title. Dimitri Bivol takes on Trent Broadhouse. Listen, I expect the Bivol Express to keep rolling. Once again, I think this is HBO just kind of replenishing the pool, throwing stuff out there, investing into a guy like Bivol in the 175-pound class. But, Gabe, I think Bivol's had a productive 2017. He blew out Samuel Clarkson, who was actually on a decent run of upsets, and absolutely smoked him in four. Then he took on Cedric Agnew, dominated him on the Andre Ward-Sergey Kovalev undercard on June 17th, and now it's clear that HBO has said, hey, we're in the Bivol business. For a young fighter that doesn't even have 20 fights, he can't complain about 2017.
No, he's had a hell of a year. A really exciting guy. This went from prospect to, you know, now fighting for a title real fast. You know, it's kind of like Lipinets. These guys that just have a few fights, but you just see them and you go, oh, yeah, they're ready. You know, they're totally ready. You can see it in the work ethic. You can see it just in the way they approach their business. For his part, Trent Broadhurst has got one loss, which was a KO loss, about eight fights into his career. Since then, you know, he's been on a long win streak, but he's 29 years old. He's just, you know, kind of an Australian jag, I guess. 20 wins, one loss, 12 KOs, some tattoos, kind of a, you know, tight punching frame. When he's overmatched his foe, he'll go in there and knock him out to the body or to the head. He's got all the punches, but I think Bivol's probably a class above and gets the guy out of there.
And for the uninitiated on this show, JAG, J-A-G, that is a Bill Parcellism for just another guy. Moving on real quickly before we get to the Twitter timeline, news and notes here. I believe this is now official. December 9th on HBO, Orlando Salido will now take on Mickey Roman from the Mandalay Bay on HBO. Gabe, you know what? I think it's an even fight, and I think this is going to be a Mexican battle.
Yeah, it's going to be like a Mexican, demolition derby. Whoever can keep their car together the longest wins. You know, I think it's going to be a good fight.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Let's go to the Twitter timeline. You can reach us at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. And, of course, we start with the president, Andrew B. Kennedy. Seems like some UK fans see Eddie Hearn differently than many U.S. fans. Do they have a point in your opinion, or do they not realize how good they have it? Again, they're allowed to have their opinion, and if they don't like his product, don't buy it. Now, personally, I think some of them have this phobia. They need to get over it. And the guy puts on good events, the way I look at it. And if you're complaining about undercard fights, I hate to tell you, if a lot of that stuff is like the third or fourth fight in the afternoon, you need to stop taking this that seriously, Gabe. I mean,
seriously.
Honestly, I've seen some absolute butcherings and some really bad fights. But you know what? Who cares? Seriously.
Seriously, if the main event is good and the main event was really good, looking over that card, it was like, what are people complaining about? Like, oh, my God, these guys he had a bunch of last-minute replacements. Yeah, it's called the undercard. That's kind of boxing. Yeah, I don't understand what the complaint is, but that's there's some, you know, Twitter is a small, makes boxing a much more tiny universe than it already is, and certain people just like to complain and like to, you know, be negative. And I, you know, I sound like a promoter or Richard Schaefer when talking about negative press, but that's how it seems sometimes, you know, because I don't get in the mix of it all the time. When I get to see a live fight, that's when I'm tweeting. But generally, you know, I'm kind of just watching from the road, seeing how the Twitter thinks. And a lot of it is, yeah, just bitching and moaning and never happy. We've had a great year in 2017, and Eddie Hearn's been a huge part of that. And, you know, here he is going to bring us Danny Jacobs at the end of the year in the United States. Do you think he's not thinking about coming to the U.S.? People have no patience.
By the way, that show, from what I hear, is not selling well, and it's something that I've talked about and I'll be writing about. Eddie Hearn will have a dose of reality. He'll find out real quickly the U.S. market is much more difficult in terms of selling boxing and promoting live events than the U.K. And listen, we're not Eddie Hearn housemen. You may think we are, but we tell the truth. But at the same time, he doesn't dominate our thoughts. Some of these people have Hearn phobia. It's kind of bizarre, and it's to a point now I just goad people and I'll just troll, and it's interesting to see these otherwise decent fellows just act like a bunch of complete imbeciles. Again, nobody is forcing you to buy his cards. It's like I've made a decision not to go to a lot of PBC stuff. I'm good with it, you know. Here's a question from Alex G. Anthony Joshua has amazing charisma. To be crossover star, what would it take for that to happen? Or does it come down to luck, and can that be created? Well, listen, you got to have a horse to ride. And Anthony Joshua comes out of central casting. He has a look, and that's another demographic that loves him, the females. The ladies love Anthony Joshua. But he could fight. He's in the glamour division. But even with all that, Gabe, you do need a promoter to market that. It matters.
You also need a dance partner. You need a foil, you know? And so I think, you know, Deontay Wilder calling him out and them having a dialogue publicly is great. But now, you know, it's about performances. And it's you've now got to catch Deontay. It's not like it's too late. He can catch the public's attention with some performances that demand attention, that get on SportsCenter or whatever. And so that you start to, you know, begin this collision course. But I think that's what you generally, you know, when you catch the casual fans' attention and then you're spectacular when you do, that's what makes a star. And Joshua has a lot of the pieces, but I think he really needs the foil.
Here's a question from Babs. Is Linares versus Garcia a real possibility for the new year? Now, in case you did not hear, both Linares and Garcia had designs and hopes of fighting Terry Flanagan for the WBO lightweight title. Well, Flanagan, after making a lot of noise about fighting them, is going to fight neither of them. He's moving up to 140 to fight for the vacant belt left by Terrence Crawford. So now Linares and Garcia kind of need each other. Now, this is what I found interesting. Eric Gomez, the president of Golden Boy Promotions, over the weekend said, okay, you know what? I want to send out a feeler here. Now, let me get to his tweet and this is on Saturday afternoon. Now, I thought it was really interesting that he just flat out went there. He says, at Mikey Garcia, if you are serious about wanting to fight at Jorge Linares, call me. No options, no extra fights, straight up. # no excuses. Gabe, did you just hear that? That was the gauntlet being thrown down.
I love it. I love that he did it on social media, too. Let's just be transparent about this. Let's cut all the interviews of the different sites back and forth. Let's just get down to it. Will Mikey take it?
You know what I found hilarious? Mikey then responded on Twitter by saying, hey, why'd you have to make that public? You have my phone number. And then someone pointed out, Mikey, you're the one who came out in public and detailed the terms of what Golden Boy wanted on Twitter. You can't have it both ways. And to that, I have two words, checkmate. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. And if you want to join us on Twitter, again, we're here for at least another hour, at SteveUCNLive and at Gabriel_Montoya. Gabe, let's go to the phone lines.
It's funny, you know, when guys kind of step outside the box and then they bristle when somebody does it right back at them. 530, you're live on the next round.
Hello, Gabe, Steve, Ringside, Robert here.
Robbie,
what's up,
welcome
man?
Aboard.
First of all, I'm proud to be an American, but in the heavyweight division, all roads lead through the UK. And it's as simple as that. If Deontay Wilder seriously wants to put up his title against Anthony Joshua, he's got to punch his passport. I see absolutely no reason for AJ to give up his home ring advantage. I mean, when is the last time, Steve, other than Canelo Alvarez, that we had a place here in the United States that drew over 50,000 for a fight? The last time recently was Canelo Alvarez against Liam Smith. I mean, can you see a scenario where we could fill up at least 50,000 people for that fight? Because in most places, if Joshua fights here, chances are it's probably going to be in Las Vegas or maybe New York. I mean, because, you know, let's face it, if the casinos get involved, like you've mentioned with the Canelo Alvarez scenario, all big fights are going to be in Vegas. I mean, they would have to pay him a significant amount of money just to make his travel plans.
And let's make this clear, Robbie.
Okay.
Anthony Joshua is not just coming here with this belt or for a payday. I believe that this will be a British invasion. And I remember when Ricky Hatton came over to the States in 2007, and I was actually at the first fight where he fought that really strong left-hander. I think it was at the Paris in Las Vegas. And then that was right before he fought Jose Luis Castillo. And I said to myself, wow, the British are coming, the British are coming, the British came. Anthony Joshua probably brings the same type of numbers.
Absolutely he does. But, I mean, other than us hardcore boxing people who follow this and do shows, most Americans wouldn't even know who Carlos Takam was. And to turn on the TV on Saturday afternoon and see 70 to 75,000 people in a stadium to watch him fight, that's impressive. You cannot ignore that. And I understand.
And the thing that you hear, like in those broadcasts,
yeah,
that you rarely hear over here, but like with few exceptions, the atmosphere. Those two words you hear from the commentators, the atmosphere. You never hear those words over here anymore.
No, you don't.
Yeah, people are tripping that he needs to come over.
Let me
throw this at you, Steve and Robert.
Okay.
2020 is when the Raiders Stadium opens. Is that too long to wait for Wilder, Joshua?
You know what? I believe a reasonable amount of time for that fight to quote-unquote marinate is late 2018 or the first quarter of 2019. To go all the way to 2020, I mean, listen, both guys have kind of been vulnerable here. Are you sure both of them can stay upright for another 2.5 years, Gabe?
Well, and I don't know if this is going to play into it, guys, but keep one thing in mind. Doesn't Joshua only have maybe two more fights left on his Showtime deal?
Okay. I wrote about this, and it was stuck in my article today. I did an update for this about a month and a half ago when I spoke to Eddie Hearn at the forum. After this fight, I believe that the Showtime has an option to match any offers. So sooner rather than later, HBO will start making a bid for Mr. Joshua.
Yeah. Well, see, that's my point. I think if the Wilder fight is going to happen, it has to happen soon because, you know, Eddie Hearn has already put most of his products over on HBO. And Joshua being the biggest chip in the game, I it's a foregone conclusion, in my opinion, that he's going to wind up on HBO. Well, before that happens, I think this fight has to happen. Otherwise, the whole PBC thing is going to get in the way of this fight. And let's face it, boxing fans have to see this fight. And, hopefully it happens. Because otherwise, if Joshua goes to HBO, I think we're going to run into another Mayweather-Pacquiao kind of
scenario. No, but listen, the way I look at it, though, if you can work out Klitschko-Joshua, where both HBO and Showtime participated in the broadcast, why can't that be a more regular template when circumstances like this occur?
Well, you know, that makes perfect sense to me, Steve. I would be all for that.
Yeah. Robbie, anything else?
No, I just really wanted to comment on this because I think anybody in their right mind needs to stand up and pay attention to what's happening here. And for those people, I don't know what the British have against Hearn. I'm not there. But I think he's doing the best for his client. And if I was at the negotiating table, I would tell Al Haymon and whoever else is involved, if Deontay Wilder wants to defend his title, he's got to punch his ticket and go to London.
Okay, Robbie, you have been heard. Thank you very much. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe?
281, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, this is Nate from Houston.
Nate, oh, an early call.
Hey, what's
going on?
Hey, man, just that game last night?
Yes, I did. It was listen, if they're juicing the baseballs, I say make them all like Minute Maid. Baseball needs to be more like that.
Yeah, that was a pretty wild game. So pretty fun to have a series like this, right? I mean, whoever ends up winning, just really exciting. And I'm not a baseball fan, so it's pretty cool. But one thing that someone asked about last week, you were going to find out, was who Kovalev's trainer was this time around.
It's that guy that's in Oxnard that trains one of the young Olympians for Top Rank. Quite frankly, I've never heard of the guy, but I do think he speaks Russian. He's from that part of the world. So it might be a better personality fit than John David Jackson, who I believe is getting a bad rap. You know, for 5-6 years, John David Jackson put in a lot of work. And now all of a sudden, there's almost like this effort to discredit him, which I think is completely unfair.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. That was kind of a little bit of a weird relationship, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, he's a good trainer, so he'll be all right. He'll be back. After that Joshua fight, I mean, I guess a couple of things with Joshua. I'm just so impressed with him just because you talked about it a little bit earlier. The guy didn't have much of an amateur career. I mean, yeah, he won a gold medal, obviously, right? But he didn't have that many amateur fights. He only had 20 pro fights. And
right.
He just has a nice, natural kind of ability that he punches in combinations. He counterpunches. I mean, usually when you see someone who starts late, they can't do those things, right? It's all mechanical. And to be that size and do it, oof.
Now, Nate, you seem to know a lot about fitness, okay? You seem to have some knowledge about. Would he be better off at lower 240s than in the low 250s?
Well, I mean, I think it's a matter just of what his body fat level is, really. And I mean, I doubt that he gained any muscle mass from last time to this time. I don't know why he would or why he would try, right? It doesn't really make any sense. And he talked about wanting to, thinking that he was going to be a little bit lighter, so. You know, I mean, it's not like the guy isn't cut already, but he is so big, you don't really, 5 or 10 pounds of body fat on a guy like that, hard to even see, So, I think if he's in a little better condition and he comes in, say, what was he, 254 or something? He comes in at 240, 245, he's just going to be that much quicker. And, if you think he looks big and ripped now, whew. Wait till you see what he looks like if he does that.
Yeah, because I do wonder if less is more with him. I mean, listen, he's going to win every weigh-in with the way he looks. He'll win every stare-down, but your body has to be functional to the sport. That's all I'm saying.
Well, yeah, and
yeah, he looks thick, man. He looks way too thick. The arms, like, I mean, maybe it's just his body, but it just looks like he uses a lot of weights. And of course, every boxing trainer I've ever talked to is not big on the weights, particularly the upper body. If you want to do stuff for squats or whatever for your power for your legs, that's one thing. But
do you know if he really does do any weights, though? I'm kind of wondering if he even does. He's just a big guy. I mean, like Herschel Walker.
Could just be a big guy.
Yeah. Well, Nate, remember the story of Herschel Walker growing up that he would do 1,000 push-ups and 1,000 sit-ups a day, or between every commercial of a TV show, he'd bust out 100 push-ups and pull-ups?
Right.
I mean, can you really look like that, just doing, like, natural weights or the Bowflex? I have a hard time believing that.
Well, you know, you know, there's a gene that we have called myostatin, and it basically controls how much muscle mass you have. It's actually an inhibitor for muscle growth, and so if you have less of it, then more muscle will grow naturally. So I don't know if you've ever noticed or heard of the there's some cows that are Belgian white or Belgian blue cows. You know, Google that and take a look at these cows. Just have like muscle porn off them. It's because they have very little of that gene.
So wait a minute. Are they the ones they get muscle milk from? I kid. Never mind. Had to go back. Anyway. Nate, anything else we could do for you?
No, with that, you guys have a good night and appreciate it.
That's our first muscle milk reference on the next round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya. 347-215-7598, Gabe. Oh, someone's trying to make a left turn here.
Yeah, apparently. Let's go to Jimmy's Corner a little early.
Oh,
978,
yeah.
You're live on the next round.
Not last call. Happy hour. Okay. Jimmy?
Jimmy.
Oh, no.
Or not.
Did we lose him? Oh, okay, we'll get back to him.
Yeah, we'll come back to him. 313, you're live on the next round.
Hello?
Or not.
You said 313?
Yes.
Hey, this was checking, man. I didn't really see the fight, but I'm hearing a lot of criticism from people about Joshua and things of that nature. But you got to think, Takam is better than anybody Wilder's fought to me.
You know, he's certainly better, in my view, than anyone that he's had a title defense against. And listen, in some of those fights, Wilder actually struggled. I don't think for one moment Joshua struggled on Saturday afternoon.
I didn't get a chance to see it, but what I do really want to see, I hope I can, is the Gassiev-Ticos fight. Because that has all the makers of a fight that's not going to last long, but it's going to be good while it's going.
If that fight ends up in Miami, Florida, get me on Expedia. I will be there.
Yeah. Definitely, if I could get time, I'll try to go myself, man. Because, you know, actually, what happened to Rob Brant? I mean, I guess Brahmer went to the time machine or something like that. Because, you know, it was kind of set up for Brant to do well. But, I mean, I guess Jurgen got
you know, he froze. He flat out froze. He had no answers for that southpaw style. And as I tweeted, he was like that piece of cheddar in that Cheez-It commercial. Not ready.
Calvin Smith might not be ready either that next round. I mean, you look at
it. It's an interesting fight. By the way,
yeah.
Gabe, I love the semifinals of the World Boxing Super Series. Both divisions. Solid matchup.
Oh, yeah. I mean, poor Grant. I mean, he just wasn't ready for that level. And I gotta tell you, I was surprised. I mean, Bronner hadn't been down to that weight in like a decade, and he looked like the more active, sharp, ready to go guy. He also looked like 68, but particularly by the end of the fight. But just in the face, you know, everything else. I mean, he solid LMG all the way through. it was a hell of a performance from a guy that had been out for a year and was coming off a loss. But yeah, the next round is going to be ridiculous. Callum Smith, I mean, will youth be served? Will it get served against Brahma? I tend to think Callum Smith will be ready for him. But what do you think about Groves versus Eubank Jr.?
That, to me, will be a great promotion. I think there's a lot of personal animosity, pride, and it'll be a big-time promotion out there in the U.K.
I mean, Groves has the experience against much better competition. So he should have the craft experience. Really, it's one of those fights where he could either knock Eubank out or get a decision. I think Eubank more so has to really knock him out to win. So I like guys that have two ways to win a fight than one, really.
Yeah, early on, and I could change my mind, I like Eubank in that fight, boys.
Yeah, I do too. I think it could
either
be
way.
Tight for a while, but speed and power is going to take over.
All right, anyway, listen, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. 347-215-7598. At the top of the next hour, we'll have fight review, fight preview, and news and notes. Gabe?
All right, and we're kind of burning through them. We're a little light today. I'm not, I don't know if the football's taking it away or what. 209, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good. What's going on?
Yeah, I want to talk about Anthony Joshua. You know what? I also believe that he doesn't need to come over here. I mean, guy is killing it over there. I mean, why change it? You know? What I'm curious to know is why aren't these heavyweights over here wanting to go over there so they could grab some of that Anthony Joshua's piece of the pie, so to speak? I mean,
that's a great question. Why?
Seriously. He's making a killing. He's milking the hell out of the cows. I mean, why go to another pasture that's green when your pasture ain't that bad?
Think about this, the illogical nature of this. The guy who draws 70,000 people to fight Carlos Takam is expected to travel to face the guy who legitimately may not sell 7,000 tickets this weekend in Brooklyn. Tell me in what world that makes any sense, guys.
You know what else? This is just my own personal opinion, right? I don't think any one of Al Heyman's heavyweights that he have in his stable, combine them all together and put them on one card. I don't think they could do that.
No,
I mean, if they were all...
I don't think so either. But again, it's a different market. In all fairness, again, I think the U.S. market for boxing, especially if you're not Mexican, like a Canelo Alvarez, it is more difficult. But again, 70,000 is literally 10 times more than 7,000.
Yeah. Now I heard your comment that you made earlier about Anthony Joshua being a bigger moneymaker than Canelo. Okay, let's just say, hypothetically speaking.
You know, I don't know that, though. What I'm saying is I think he's a bigger international figure. Now, what we don't know is the pay-per-view market, because the pay-per-view market, because they charge – a lot more out here in the States. This is where the business is most robust in terms of that revenue pie. Okay.
Uh-huh.
But Anthony Joshua is one of the very few fighters like a Golovkin and a Canelo. They have real major endorsements also. Keep that in mind.
Yeah. I want to ask, I was just thinking after watching his fight, which was pretty good. I thought, you know, what I was very impressed with was a head movement between both of the fighters. A lot of shots, I mean, they were all practically head shots. I mean, and a lot of the punches were slipping, especially the hooks were slipping, you know, because of their head movement. Anyways, it got me thinking. Anthony Joshua over there is a star. I mean, a rock star. I mean, I'm sure he's got girls throwing themselves at him left and right. Coming over here, I think the diehards know who he is, but I don't think the casuals or general public knows who he is. I mean, I could go over there just up and down the street and ask people, do you know who Canelo is? And 9 out of 10 times they're going to say yes. But if I ask them, do you know who Anthony Joshua is? I'm probably going to get a blank stare. You know, I think he's going to need some kind of building building up over here in the States. But with that being said, I don't think he needs – I still don't think he needs to come over here. I mean
– I think he will, but it's just befuddling to me when people say he has to. Not really. It's an option. It's an option.
Yeah,
That's all it is.
That's what I was thinking. Why aren't these heavyweights going over there? It's like, hey, Anthony Joshua, I mean, where the hell are you getting all this money from here? Well, why don't I try to get some of that money? That's just my own personal opinion. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to let you go.
All right.
I like listening to your show. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And, Gabe, I think our caller made a great point. As of right now, Anthony Joshua would not resonate with the general public, but he's a heavyweight champion. He has a look, very striking. But isn't that why you need, again, a promoter to help this along and to improve that?
Yeah, I mean, look at, how many fights it's taken Gennady Golovkin to break through, you've got to have steady business. You got to fight often, three times a year, I think, is, in that initial run towards gaining, gaining a fan base. It's got to be the right fight over here at the right time. There isn't an American heavyweight that resonates with the general public. So to do it now would be kind of ridiculous, but boxing is a weird thing in that you're kind of this independent contractor. You're working with this promoter, trying to build yourself as in this case, a champion. Each guy's like their individual business, and you're really dependent on everybody else to do as well as you do. If you're an Anthony Joshua, but Wilder, I'd like to see him hold up that end of the bargain. I'm not really seeing that. But, back to the phone lines. 805. You're live on the next round.
Hello.
805. Hello.
Hey guys, what's up? It's me, Nacho.
Nacho,
hey,
welcome back.
Hey, yeah, thanks. As far as this weekend's fights, Joshua did what he was supposed to do, especially against a late replacement like Takam. But I definitely agree with a lot of people that was a dubious stoppage at best, because Takam was never really hurt. All he was just cut and bleeding, and it seemed like they kept trying to stop the fight every round for some reason. I don't know why, but it is what it is. He wins. He moves on. And as far as this whole Deontay Wilder business, he went over there a few years ago to fight Audley Harrison. Why the hell is he scared all of a sudden now to go back?
Good question.
That's what I don't
isn't
understand.
Isn't he turning down $4 million to fight Dillian White, a guy
apparently
that he'd be favored to beat?
Apparently that's what Hearn keeps saying. Yeah. Exactly. So apparently Al Haymon knows he has a Fabergé egg of a champion, and he doesn't want to risk losing that belt. So that's pretty interesting. He keeps protesting about going to England, but he already went to fight Audley Harrison about 5-6 years ago. So I don't understand why the reservations about going now.
Especially when Gennady Golovkin didn't have an opponent, and after the Eubank situation happened, they went to England. Created a market value, went out there and fought in front of a big crowd, advanced the career. But Deontay Wilder, who can't even fill the lower bowl of the Barclays Center, he's above that, huh? It's interesting.
Yeah, he can't even sell his own hometown out. So what the hell is he talking about? That's what I don't get.
Well, there's a lot of things to do in Birmingham, Nacho, in all fairness.
Apparently. I was pretty disappointed, Steve, because I was on the Rob Brandt train. Especially how he had looked the last 3-4 fights. I was very disappointed in his game plan against Bramer, especially fighting a 39-year-old who was coming off a year layoff and had gotten stopped in his last fight. I thought he was ripe for the picking, but apparently his corner didn't know what the hell to do. So I blame his corner because they obviously never figured out how to fight a southpaw, because the one thing he did all night that was working – was hitting Bramer with straight rights down the middle, but he wouldn't do it often enough. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, that's your money punch right now. That's the one thing that's working. And he would just, like, get away from it, and he would just let Bramer dictate the action. And if you're the 27-year-old, you're supposed to be pressing the action, not letting the old man dictate. So
Gabe, you know what was disappointing about Brandt? And maybe he just wasn't seasoned enough. Maybe he's not a super middleweight. Hey, fighting on the road, especially that first time, is difficult, okay? No sense of urgency, though. None.
Yeah,
exactly.
He
was lost in space, you know? He's just trying to figure out how to box this guy who's kind of herky-jerky and hitting him at will and not fighting like an old man at all. He just looked outclassed, outgunned. And Derek James, who people were calling, if they win this fight, he's trainer of the year. It'd be hard to argue with him. He just couldn't get him. He was like, you know, I need you to come forward and throw punches. He just wouldn't do it. Maybe it was the weight, you know, and traveling. Just the whole thing got to him. It's a big promotion. And the production value of it is top quality, man.
And
all those lights, everything happening, boom, you freeze. Happens.
And guys, sometimes experience matters.
Yeah.
It matters.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it was funny too, because the guy who was broadcasting the fight, when I was watching it, basically said Bramer had fought 23 12 rounders and that was Brandt's first scheduled 12 round fight.
Yeah.
I was like, oh wow. Yeah, that was a huge discrepancy when you hear that.
He did nothing to disrupt however Bramer decided he was going to fight those 12 rounds. Did nothing.
Yeah, he never made the adjustment. Yeah, and that's what was so disappointing. As far as the next fight that Bramer has, I've watched Callum Smith. I honestly think he's ready to fight someone like Bramer because he doesn't have that deer in the headlights look that Brandt obviously showed this past weekend. He's fought on pretty big cards in England, so I think he'll be ready for that fight, and I think he's going to do what Brandt should have done. Yeah, I think he's a really good fighter, and he'll show it against Bramer. I think he wins that one. And then the other fight, I want to say that Groves has a legit shot, but I just think something happened to him after those fights against Frotch. He took something out of him, and he just really hasn't been the same. And also, that fight he fought against the German guy last year where he put that guy in the hospital, I think mentally that's kind of taken something out of him also. So I think Eubank wins that fight, in my opinion. And the last thing I wanted to say was on the undercard of the Joshua fight, Steve, is Kyle your fight coming in February to LA for that Superfly card?
When I spoke with Tom Loeffler earlier today about what is in store for Superfly, now the main event is set. It's going to be Sor Rungvisai against Estrada, which I believe is an outstanding fight. Roman Gonzalez, in my view, wants to be on that card, so I think there's a good chance of that. Kalia Fai's name was mentioned by Tom Loeffler, so I think he's in the running.
Okay. All right. Well, and then this weekend's fight, I'm taking Lipinets to beat that Japanese dude easy. I think he steamrolls him. I got Porter winning an ugly unanimous decision as he usually does against Granados. And as far as the main event, I'm picking, as much as I hate to say it, Wilder's going to win because there's not going to be much of a difference from the first fight. I think he just outboxes Stavern again and just wins a unanimous decision.
Okay, it is Chalk City for you, Nacho, and quite frankly, I don't disagree. Nacho, as always, thank you for the call.
All right, thanks.
347-215-7598. Gabe, as we wait for the phone lines to fill up again, and hopefully Jimmy's Corner joins us, going on to the fight review, we spoke about this. Jürgen Brammer goes on to the semifinals of the World Boxing Super Series tournament at 168, soundly defeating Rob Brandt. Also, fight preview this Thursday, Golden Boy on ESPN2 from Tucson, Arizona. Jesus Sotocaraz takes on Juan Carlos Abreu. And Ryan Garcia, hot prospect, is in the co-feature. And from Russia, Gabe, I didn't know this. Did you know Ricardo Mayorga's fighting? He's fighting Andre Sorokin at 168. Yeah, interesting.
At 168, that's a lot skinnier than I would have thought. I figured it'd be like a light heavyweight fight. At least, you know, like an anyweight fight. Just whatever shape I show up in fight.
Saturday in Monte Carlo, underneath B-Vol Broadhouse, the WBA 118-pound title is on the line. Jamie McDonald takes on Liborio Solis. And Scott Quigg, he's in an elimination bout for the WBA. Then on BN Sports from Viva Mexico, Louis Neri takes on Arthur Villanueva. And then Jose Zapata takes on Mike Perez. Moving on to some news and notes here. According to Frank Espinoza, the manager for WBO featherweight champion Oscar Valdez, they will return in February or March of 2018 on ESPN. And speaking of ESPN, Gabe, Gilberto Ramirez will be debuting February 3rd on ESPN under their top-ranked series. And Ray Beltran, because that WBO title at 135 is now vacant, I believe he'll be taking on Paulus Moses. And then Terrence Crawford is scheduled to go March 10th on ESPN. And I believe that's going to be against Jeff Horn, Gabe.
Jeff Horn. I don't
yeah.
know how I feel about that fight.
It's belt collecting. It's belt collect. The question is, listen, I get it. You dip your toe in the water at 147. You get that belt.
Sure.
The question is, all the other belt holders are on the other side of the fence. Can you ever make those fights that we want? That's the question.
Can they make, you know, who do they work for? Or, you know, does Al work for them or do they work for Al? Can they, you know, get those fights? Because, I mean,
yeah.
Terrence Crawford, I think he's like the wild card in that division because of the way he fights. We don't know a lot about him at the weight, but I like the versatile nature with which he fights. Out of both stances, power out of both stances. Will that power translate in a meaningful way to 147 against these other guys? I think, you know, Errol Spence is the class of the division, but Crawford is that X factor. Will those fights get made? I don't know, man. I have no idea.
And also, we mentioned this earlier, Turbo, Terry Flanagan, is moving up. He's not going to unify his belts at 135. He will be moving up to 140, and I believe that the next highest available contender that he could face is Maurice Hooker, who, quite frankly, got an absolute gift against Darlys Perez. Listen, I'm not sure if Flanagan can even make the weight. Maybe he can, but you want to talk about taking on the path of least resistance. I think this is a prime example.
Yeah, fellas, I'm just going to take this elevator. I'll see you guys later. Yeah.
347-215-7598. Gabe, do we have any calls on the line? It's been a little light today, as you mentioned.
Yeah, we got a few. That's just hilarious. As you said, belts matter. Sometimes it's an escape hatch. 619.
Yeah.
You're live on the next round.
Hey, guys.
619?
Juan, talk to
us. What's up, Juan?
How you doing, guys? I wanted to touch a couple of things. Let me get out of this place I am. One of the things I wanted to talk about, and I wanted to ask you, is that fight between Crawford and Horn going to be in Australia?
No, I believe it's going to be in Las Vegas.
Really?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense when you have a guy that draws in his hometown, and the other guy draws in his home country. You can make it an event. I don't know. Oh, well.
Yeah. Listen, they believe they got to expand their horizons, and hey, it's not my money. It's not my business. We just report the news.
Yeah, that is a weird thing, though. You know, it's just like the main events playbook with Vord Kovalev. Although, you know, those guys.
Yeah, same thing with the Salido fight against this guy. What's his name? The guy he's fighting now, I forgot his name. It's going to be in Vegas, too, which, again, doesn't make any sense to me. I was looking forward to going to the StubHub to watch that fight, but to my surprise, it's going to be in Vegas, too.
Yeah, I'm told listen, I know we're not in Green Bay or Saskatchewan, but
uh-huh.
they felt December that there might be weather issues at night, you
true.
Know, in terms of the temperature at StubHub.
Mm-hmm. Well, true. The other thing I wanted to talk about is the Joshua fight. I saw the fight live, and, you know, now that Showtime is showing us the fight, which is great, Joshua is much watched TV now that he's a must-watch TV now that he's, fighting every 4 or 5 months. That guy, he's the biggest draw in boxing right now, and You know, every time he's on, I want to watch him. And one of the things that I was looking at, everybody was saying that he got exposed. And I'm sure you talked about this. I didn't hear the beginning of the program. But one of the things that people don't realize, this is a late sub. Even if you're as good as a guy, as Joshua, if you don't prepare for a guy exclusively and with a style like Takam, it might get complicated. And you're not going to blow away every guy you fight. Even Tyson back in the day when he was blowing everybody out, he didn't blow out Bone Crusher Smith. He didn't blow, Tony Tucker. He had to fight some fights differently. And I think Joshua, he saw that this guy wasn't easy. He was complicated. He, even though the guy wasn't winning any rounds, I think he won one at the most. But the guy was making it complicated. He wasn't going to get knocked out. Even though they stopped it for no apparent reason, but the guy wasn't going to get stopped. He was there to fight 12 rounds.
Yeah, he took some flush shots, though, like three or four flush shots leading into the final couple shots, and then the refs stopped it. I just think he had stopped being crafty and wasn't really in the fight anymore. I think the ref just saved him a brutal beatdown.
And to give Takam credit, as you mentioned, Juan, he's sturdy. He's kind of built like a big fire hydrant. That's not an easy guy to get rid of.
No. And I agree with you, Gabe. I thought the fight was already a done deal. We knew who was going to win. It really didn't make sense for him to continue with those two cuts. And I'm okay with it. It's not a satisfying ending, but again, in the end, Joshua continued his knockout streak, if you want to call it that, and that's good. But again, my whole point of this is what people are saying, and in this age that everybody has an opinion, everybody can say it at any point. There were people saying, "Nah, he's exposed. Wilder will take care of him. A prime Tyson would knock him out." The usual things. And I was like, "Dude, you clearly don't watch enough boxing to know that not every fight is going to be a blowout, even if you're a big guy like Joshua." And the other thing that I liked about Joshua is that he didn't get desperate. He saw that the guy was complicated and paced himself. He was like, stay composed, threw his shots, calculated.
Yeah.
And I like that. I think that says a lot of the guy. I think the guy's going to become a better and better fighter with each fight. And that's what impressed me about the guy.
I mean, you could see him get a little tired and not, get too far into the red. Like, all right, I got to manage this. This guy's not going to – he's going to make me try to work for it and drown me. I can't let that happen. It was as good as you could do with an opponent like that, I thought, besides knocking him out, catching him with that shot.
The only thing I didn't like about, the whole thing, the whole fight, is the interview. When they ask him, hey, who do you want to fight? I just throw punches. I let that to my managers. What's up, dude? Just call the guys out. call Wilder out. Just go ahead and you call the shots. You be the man. Be like James Toney. Be like those guys that used to say, I want that guy, and I'm going to get him, and I'm going to knock him out, and be the champ. I think that's like the safe way out of it. And I don't know. I just think that it takes the way out of him of actually taking responsibility of who he wants to fight and who he's going to fight next. And, of course, they're not going to fight Wilder next because both sides won't agree as easily as we want, but at least try it. At least say it. And I think that's missing in most fighters today, having the guts and the huevos to just call out fighters, And I think that if we had more of that, and not that he needs it because he's already very popular, but we would have more guys that would be more popular and more, more well-known for that. So I was impressed. I still think that the fight against Wilder is kind of a toss-up. I favor him. He has better skills, better balance. But in the end, you don't know. These guys are big. These guys are big boys.
All right, Juan, listen, as always, thank you for the call. And, yeah, as for the – it ain't the 1990s anymore. I don't know what to say. Gabe, who's next?
Yeah, and I – to me, him not calling him out, I mean, I just think, like you said, and there's just so much money involved. But also I think it speaks to the fact that he has a promoter that he's on the same page with. They have a plan, and they're working that plan and doing very well at it. When you have 70,000 people there, you don't need to call anybody out. You're the man. And I think that's how Anthony Joshua is playing it. Let's go overseas. 4-4-2. You're live on the next round.
Fellas.
Oh, Ed.
Fellas.
Welcome aboard.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
Well,
what's up?
I tuned in an hour late. I didn't realize your clocks don't change. Ours do. Fucking heck. I missed the first hour of the show. How's it going, guys? You good?
Good.
We're good.
Good. Yeah, I was got a newfound respect for old Carlos Takam. He's got a pretty hard head, right? I think it was something people were overlooking. Do you know he was an Olympian, Takam?
Yes.
But people are sort of aware of that. I think that was kind of significant in the fight, in the sense that he had the savvy to protect himself, but I didn't actually think he was competitive at any point in the fight, if I'm being honest. I mean, he had a sort of a body shot flurry in the seventh, which I thought was effective, but I mean, I didn't really see. I've seen some people on Twitter sort of saying, oh, we don't know what would have happened if he was allowed to go on. I think there was a minute and a half left in the 10th, and he was hurt. I mean, it was a bullshit stoppage, but he was hurt, right? I mean, does he survive that minute and a half if he's allowed to go on, do you think, in the context of what had happened prior to that?
I'm not Kim Stradamus, but there is something to be said about saving a guy's battery life. Like, you know, did he need to take any more punches, especially with that cut? I mean, if this fight was 5-4 in rounds and it was a nip-and-tuck battle, that stoppage is scandalous. But in a fight that's 9-1 or 8-1 going into the 10th, I don't know. I don't think it's – listen, I didn't like the stoppage, but I didn't find it completely egregious either.
Well, it wasn't say, like, those rounds close, you know?
No.
It wasn't, yeah.
I was going to say, guys, like, for all the talk, like, for a guy with 20 fights, and tell me what you think in relation to other fighters, yeah? In his most recent, say, 5 fights, he's had to deal with being wobbled, being dropped, being completely gassed, having a, if not broken, then severely busted nose early in a fight that went late. This is a really good learning experience for a guy with 20 fights, right? I mean, how many guys have had to deal with that inside 20 fights when most people are still fighting, you know, bums, you know, at least sort of until they get to sort of 20-plus fights? Is this not, I mean, this is pretty good experience in the long stay, wouldn't you say?
It is, but you know what my biggest fear is, guys? That he's just gonna—that he's already a 2-fight-a-year guy.
Yeah.
I just don't know what that does for his overall development.
That's not going to change.
Yeah, unfortunately.
It's not going to change, though. If you're fighting in football stadiums, you're not going to be fighting 3 times a year. It's just that's not going to happen. And you can't house him at the O2 Arena now. I mean, that place, it's a good arena, but, I mean, I've been to Wembley. I've been to, you know, it's just, you know, it's nothing. I mean, in terms of, you know, housing a guy like that. I mean, I saw AJ when he was on Kell Brook's undercard fighting fucking Kevin Johnson, for Christ's sake. And he was the main event that night, and that place absolutely erupted. And that was well before, you know, he doing what he's doing now. There's 3 fights. I think Eddie Hearn was saying 3 fights because people want to see AJ fight 3 times, but I don't think it can happen. It's just, not because everything's on pay-per-view now. Like, we got to pay £20 to watch AJ's fights now, whereas before they were on Sky. So I don't see it personally. That's pretty much it though, guys.
Ed, one question.
Have a good one.
One question before we let you go. I was asked this over the weekend, and I really couldn't give a definitive answer myself. What's the one fight that is scheduled on the calendar that you're looking forward to the most?
That's scheduled?
One? Yeah, the right now a fight that you could point to saying, hey, in 3 weeks I want to watch that one.
But what is scheduled? Seriously, like,
that's exactly my point.
But
Rigondeaux Lomachenko? Does that tickle your fancy, as they say?
It's not
Jacob Zoria?
Just I promise you, Rigo Lomachenko is not a competitive fight. Trust my words. I'm putting my neck on the line here. It's not a competitive fight.
Yeah, the bloodthirsty.
No,
okay.
Not.
You know, I think one guy's too big, but the bloodthirsty ghoul in me, the Steve Mexican in me, I'm looking forward to Orlando Salido, Mickey Roman. I think leather's going to be hurled from all directions.
He could lose that fight, you know.
There's no doubt.
Salido?
There's no doubt.
Because if he's getting dropped by journeymen in warm-up fights, I mean, anything can happen now. I mean, the Vargas fight, Vargas is not a puncher, which is primarily why he didn't go down in that fight. He still got buzzed a couple of times. But
no,
the last three
or four years, Salido's been hitting the canvas a lot. He's like the Takate logo. He's on that canvas consistently. That means his legs are going, and maybe gone.
It's scary because I don't want to see him, like, cold-cocked. And I feel like it's going to happen at some point because if you're getting dropped by journeymen who don't punch as efficiently as higher-level guys, it's one of the reasons I didn't actually want to see the Bichelt fight, despite the fact that I thought it was going to be awesome, because that guy's got legit power. And he's got boxing skills. Salido, I don't think he can deal with a boxer at this stage.
The upcoming schedule, all I could say about those fights is they're happening.
Yeah.
That's about it.
The last thing I just wanted to ask, in a worst-case scenario, what's the latest you think a Wilder-Joshua fight happens, provided neither of them gets lost or knocked out in the interim?
Mid to late 2019.
Oh, God, can you imagine a 2-year wait for that?
I
was just thinking about it. I was thinking, man.
I'm looking forward to the Jacobs and Arias fight. I think that guy can fight a bit. He's obviously the underdog. Jacob's chin.
I'm looking forward to seeing
Jacob.
How much extra confidence he's got now that he's been through the Golovkin affair. I think he's going to be better just based on that experience alone. He's kind of coming through fire and sort of developing. I don't know. I think anyone who goes 12 with Golovkin has automatically got to be better afterwards unless they get completely chewed up. So,
That and the Lemieux Saunders. I love the middleweight division.
Oh, you know what?
So,
put me down for that. That's a good show.
Put me down for that.
That's a solid matchup.
I don't want to burst your bubble, fellas, but I do think Billy is going to stink it out and win that one.
Oh, I'm with you, Ed.
Unexpectedly,
Ed, I'm with you.
Wide decision. Yeah.
I'm with you, Ed. I'm kind of with you. But anyway, Ed, as always, thank you for the call.
Absolutely, fellas. Ciao. See you later.
3-2-3-4-7. Hold on. I'm lost my train of thought here. Watching the football game. 347-215-7598. I'm looking at Lisa Salter. She's got a very nice leather jacket on. I'm just watching the ESPN. Anyway, who's the next?
You just watch it for the fashion. 917, you're live.
Nice jacket.
On the next round.
It's cold over there in Kansas City.
Hey, guys.
Who is this? Good.
Hey, it's Joe.
Welcome aboard.
How you doing,
Joe,
guys? Hey, listen, I need a little bit of Asian Oliver Stone right now to come back.
Oh, yes, I'm good at it.
I've been seeing. Okay, so let me set the scene. The hatred for the PBC becomes so much that it goes too far in the other direction, and now people carry on about the Charlo brothers being complete juice monsters with no evidence. And the one that I've just been seeing recently that's kind of tormenting me is there's no way Deontay Wilder will ever fight Anthony Joshua, and this is Al Haymon he paid off So Povetkin fight wouldn't happen. He paid off so Luis Ortiz's
fight wouldn't happen. I don't know what to say about that. That, you know. You know, with the Charlos, we addressed this last week. Are they doing everything to prove their quote-unquote innocence, for lack of a better word? Probably not, but are they doing the requisite that is asked of other fighters? Yes. I don't know, you know,
and,
I mean, people are allowed to have their opinions, but geez.
Yeah, and it was like, I heard the same things after this Joshua fight that I did after the last Charlotte fight, where, you know, he's not in the clean boxing program. Oh, my God, you know, they could be doing anything at any time. Yeah, well, we know that. We've already been down that road. But they did do VADA testing. For those, at least for the fight camps, that's like, you know, 8 weeks of intensive testing, both, you know, the Charlo and Joshua, and nobody's talking about that. And I have to say, you know, is it perfect? No. Could he be doing something in that other window? Yes. But I bet you, and I haven't been able to confirm this, but I would be willing to put money down, like $20, that both those guys are getting tested more in that those small windows for their fight camps than guys that are in the clean boxing program. All year round.
Yeah.
Guarantee it.
It's crazy. It's putting me in a position. Yeah, it's putting me in a position where I'm finding myself defending Deontay Wilder. I don't want to defend Deontay Wilder. Come on. What are you doing to me, boxing? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's
That's
know,
all,
I mean,
guys.
I think,
man, it's crazy these days.
Yeah, they are. Things are different. Anything else, Joe?
No, guys, just wanted to reach in and say hello, and I'll see you guys
Joe,
next week.
Joe, since you are in New York, this upcoming schedule, which fights are you going to?
Well, I was going to go to Rigondeaux, Lomachenko, but then I heard that it's just about or going to be a sellout. I got to say, honestly, I'm really excited about Danny Jacobs coming to HBO and Eddie Hearn and all that. So I really wanted to see him. But again, the strength of competition out in Long Island, and I live in Westchester, so it's not terrible, but it's a bit of a drive to go out there when I can go to Barclays or MSG. Honestly, I'm not sure if I'm going to buy tickets to any. The Miguel Cotto Rolex watch-giving ceremony, as you like to call it, I'm not interested in whatsoever.
Yeah.
Even Miguel Cotto came out and said, yeah, I don't really think Sanam Ali has even the slightest chance to beat. Like,
that makes me want to run out and buy a dozen tickets.
My God. So,
you know what I've heard about New York? Is that getting from one borough to another, that number one, some of the people are very parochial. They don't want to leave.
Yeah.
And also, it's not that easy to get to. In California, you know, and I know there's traffic here, but we're spoiled. We could drive from, let's say, Carson to Inglewood, you know, to where the stadiums are. It's not that bad. I heard getting to Long Island's a bit of a trek. It's a bit of work
I'll tell you, it's a couple things. First of all, for the people that live in the boroughs that think that the world doesn't even exist outside the boroughs, it's already tough for them to conceive of anything, especially not Long Island. They might as well just plan a trip to Sweden while they're at it. But I will say that getting from Brooklyn to Queens, that can be difficult, or Queens to Brooklyn for that matter, if they wanted to go to Barclays. That's a little bit of a drag without a car. And me, I live in Westchester, north of the city, so I'm driving anywhere anyway. But that being said, yeah, you know, like the Long Island highways, they rival the 4 or the 5 out in L.A.
The 405,
they,
oh boy.
Yeah.
The driving parking lot.
The only thing worse than that is the Cross Bronx Expressway, which is never expressed for anything except express traffic. So, I mean, it is really a drag sometimes, you know, getting around. But I would say, as always, if you make a really good fight, people are going to want to comment. If they start putting good fights out on Long Island, competitive fights with names, people are going to come out because it's a brand new revamped arena, and it's going to be and if they do a good job with it, you know, it's the same thing. Look at the Barclays Center. Barclays Center is really, really nice. It's in great location. Of course, there's, you know, all the other sports teams and stuff there. But I think that that sometimes helps some of the attendance for some of the fights that aren't as competitive as they should be, because it's really nice there. And for Brooklyn residents, I mean, it's really in the middle of everything.
I mean, Joe,
so
I'm hearing outside of Regal Loma, which is in the small room, every other show is really struggling at the box office.
Well, it's like that run that you guys sometimes, that you just had one where it was like fight after fight after fight in Southern California. It's like, listen, we're not Jim Boone. We can't go to every single fight, you know?
Yeah, you know, in all fairness, Jim Boone doesn't go to all the fights either. This is just his business. We got to bring Boone on next week, maybe. Get an update from him.
Oh, man, we love Boone is becoming as great a character as, like, you know, Jimmy's Corner, Emil Carr, Jake from Ron. You know, he's like one of the guys I'm looking forward to. You know, it's like, oh, you know, there's Ringside Robbie and CT. Oh wait, Jim Boone's coming on. It's like he's just one of the crew, really.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about
it.
We got to bring him on soon. There is a group of fights, but I'm hearing in New York right now it is a buyer's market. Joe, thank you for the call. Okay, we're
Bye,
up
guys.
On 90 minutes, and I see the Chiefs about to kick off. Is there any more callers on the line we need to get to?
Yeah, let's get a little Jake in Rochester. You're live on the next round.
Hey, guys.
Close this out. What's up, man?
Hey, I was listening to Randy Gordon. He does a Monday
Wednesday commissioner.
Friday.
The commission.
He does a Monday, Wednesday, Friday. He does a Facebook Live thing for a half hour, just talking about you know, what's going on around boxing. And today he mentioned an article in boxing.com by Charles J. And it's the most astonishing boxing story you'll ever read. And I guess it's an expose on, and they haven't named it yet. In the first part is posted on there, but it says that a well-known boxing promoter and a well-known commissioner allowed a mentally retarded fighter to fight, and the promoter knew about it. Not only did they allow him to fight, but they allowed him to fight a fighter with 10 pro fights who was very aggressive, I guess, too.
Really?
Today. Yeah.
That is interesting. Wow. I don't know what to say other than I might have to read that story. I have nothing to say about it.
I just wanted to know if you guys like heard anything about it.
I mean, we know of a lot of mentally imbalanced fighters, but clinically retarded. And I'm not using that word as a pejorative. I think that's one of those words you should stay away from. Boy, that's bad. I don't know what else to really say.
No, I mean, that's a real diagnosis. I mean, I work with developmentally disabled people, so like, there's like, you are mentally retarded, and I guess they allowed a developmentally disabled people to fight a pro fight, according to Charles J., who has yet to reveal the person and the commission.
You want to talk about ending the show on a down note, Gabe? Geez, what a buzzkill this is.
Yeah.
It's bad enough I got to watch Trevor Siemian. Yeah, I mean, Gabe, I got to watch Trevor Siemian here flounder for 3 hours, but this is even worse than that.
Yeah. I'll turn on to MSNBC. Maybe it'll cheer me up.
Jake, question. You're an avid boxing fan. I'm going to ask the same question that I asked of Ed. Is there a fight on the calendar that you're really looking forward to end of the year?
Lomachenko Riga now.
Okay. Okay.
I'm really that's
And you being from Rochester, I know it's a bit of a trek. Are you going to any of the fights in New York City or in Long Island upcoming?
No.
Okay.
It's much cheaper. To be quite honest, I like watching boxing better at home than I do at a real fight. It's
right.
You know, the shit's free. I can just go get, you know, a beer or whatever. I'm on my couch, and I think the angles and view is better too. You know?
No, it, like you said, it's much less cost prohibitive. That is a factor. Like football, I love football. If I just go to one or two Miami Hurricane games a year, I'm good. I don't need to go to every single game. Now, if I lived in South Florida, would I go to more home games? Absolutely. But you know what? I went to the Georgia Tech game. You know, I'm thinking about going to one more, but I wouldn't. I don't want to go to every single one of them. I missed all the rest of the games.
If I lived in Los Angeles, I'd be going to way more fights. You know, probably not all of them, but I'd be going to more, and maybe even, you know, venturing out, to, you know, driving to Vegas to do that. But the truck
right.
in the Bay Area, there's not a lot that pulls me in. I was just in Vegas, and it reminded me of how I feel about seeing a fight in Vegas. When the fight's over, the problem is you're in Vegas. You know, I'm not a big fan of smelling like smoke, but that's just me.
Steve,
I used to be.
Steve, how many club shows? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you guys. How many club shows per week are in the Los Angeles, like Southern California?
You know, there's in LA. You know, well, speaking of that, the Belasco Theater, I believe, will be no longer. The LA Fight Club is kind of going on hiatus. They worked that situation out. There's probably about every month, about every week, maybe one. There's not as many as there were, but, you know, if you ever go to Box Rec, Jake, just go one day and go day to day. You'd be surprised how much boxing there is around the world. And you know, there's a lot of shows that happen at, like, the Renaissance Hotel. They'll happen in some other place. And you're like, wow, I didn't even know about this. That are actually local to where we are. Montebello, the Quiet Cannon has a show there, you know.
Yeah, seeing hotel shows is kind of a trip. You know, out by the airport, I think it was the Marriott that shows. And they have, like, lights that go, like, straight down above the ring. So, like, pictures you take, it looks like old, like, 1930s, 1940s kind of shots. Just makes everything really stark, kind of almost black and white looking. It's awesome seeing fights in that kind of venue. It doesn't always have to be Vegas. You know, I find that.
Yeah, and by the way,
class, so.
Yeah, and Gabe, without the Unumas series anymore from Top Rank, that number is also decreased in terms of the number of overall shows across the board. Anything else we can do for you, Jake?
I'm good. Sorry to be
all
Debbie
right.
Downer.
All right, thanks a lot. That story, jeez. Whoever, if that's true, boy, that is a – I don't know what else to say. It's just terrible. Do we have any more calls,
yeah.
Gabe?
Yeah, we have an unlisted number, so I'm going to try it.
Okay, let's try that.
Something positive to say.
Yeah, jeez.
Unlisted number. You're live on the next round. Nope. Well, I guess not. I guess it's Jake leaving us.
Okay, well, Jimmy Porter never rejoined us. He never pulled up a stool again?
No, he disappeared. He was probably at a wake, you know. I don't know.
Okay, well, all right. Well, that's it.
That guy. He's doing something.
Yeah, it's all right. Well, listen, I see the Broncos and Chiefs on my screen, so we're good. All right, well, that's it for this week's edition of The Next Round on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network. I want to thank everyone that joined us. On behalf of Gabriel Montoya, this is Steve Kim saying till the next round, goodbye, everybody.